Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 6, Chapter 13, Indra Afflicted by Sinful Reactions, Text Number 10. Shri Shukuvacha Evam Sanchodito Viprar Marudvan Ahanad Ripam Brahmahatya Hate Tasmin Asasada Rishakapim. Shri Shukuvacha. Shri Shukadeva Goswami said, Evam, thus, Sanchoditaha, be encouraged, Viprai, by the Brahmanas, Marudvan, Indra, Ahanat, killed, Ripum, his enemy, Vritrasura, well, that was his enemy, Brahmahatya, the sinful reaction for killing a Brahmana. Hate was killed. Tasmin, when he, Vritrasura, Asasada, approached, Rishakapim, Indra, was also known as Rishakapi. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace. A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Shri Shukadeva Goswami said, encouraged by the words of the sages, Indra killed Vritrasura, and when he was killed, the sinful reaction for killing a Brahmana, Brahmahatya, certainly took shelter of Indra. Purport. After killing Vritrasura, Indra could not surpass the Brahmahatya, the sinful reactions for killing a Brahmana. Formerly, he had killed one Brahmana, Vishvarupa, out of circumstantial anger. But this time, following the advice of the sages, he killed another Brahmana purposely. Therefore, the sinful reaction was greater than before. Indra could not be relieved from the reaction simply by performing sacrifices for atonement. He had to undergo a severe series of sinful reactions. And when he was freed from such suffering, the Brahmanas allowed him to perform the horse sacrifice. The planned execution of sinful deeds on the strength of chanting the holy name of the Lord or undergoing prayaschita, atonement, cannot give relief to anyone, even to Indra or Nahusha. Nahusha was officiating for Indra, while Indra, absent from heaven, was going here and there to gain release from his sinful reactions. Everything has its purpose, and similarly, the way Krishna has arranged things, namely giving people sinful reactions for sinful activities, has its purpose. The idea is not just to have people suffer, but to have people give up sinful activity. If, by simply doing some sacrifice, one became relieved from sinful activity, then people would be encouraged to do sinful activity and then perform some sacrifice just to get rid of it. But, as Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, well, what is the cause of sinful activity? As I said yesterday, Bhagavad Gita has two different ideas, main ideas. One is that One idea is that everything belongs to Krishna. That's our siddhanta. That's all you have to, if we just know that one thing, everything here belongs to Krishna, including ourselves, then we have understood the entire Vaishnava Siddhanta. Any questions? But because it's not so easy to understand that one thing, therefore we have volumes and volumes of books to try to convince us that everything belongs to Krishna. And when we're not convinced that everything belongs to Krishna, and we think things belong to us, then we have the mentality of a thief. And what happens to thieves in Krishna's kingdom? Thieves always get punished. And the first punishment is, well, as Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, Tumena vriyate vanira yatardar so malena cha yatol binavritar garbas tata tenedam avritam. Just like the fire is covered by smoke, or the mirror is covered by dust, or the embryo is covered by the womb, the living entity is covered by different degrees of this lust. So, when we act according to lust and we're arrested by the illusory energy, then we're put into a material conception and we identify ourselves with some gross and subtle body. So this is our punishment, our first punishment, for believing that these things in the material world belong to us and they're meant for our happiness. That I am the controller, I am the proprietor, I am the enjoyer. This is our punishment. We're in the material concept of life. Of course, everyone thinks they're doing quite well. Otherwise, we wouldn't have Facebook, where people are making different faces, trying to impress people how well they're doing, or how miserable they are. People also have a competition, how miserable they are. I'm not an ordinary person, I'm the most miserable person. So this is also a kind of pride that I'm better than everyone else because I'm the most miserable. It's one of the rasas, indirect rasas, lamentation. In any case, we're in this illusory conception. Luckily, we have the human form of life. So it's compared to fire is covered by smoke, that if the fire is handled carefully, then gradually it can be made to blaze and the smoke will go away. But handling that fire means, as Bhagavad Gita explains, Tesham Yesham Antikatam Papam Jananam Punya Karamanam Te Dvandva Mohan Niramuktva Bhajante Mam Drida Vrataha. First handling that fire means that we have to act religiously. Now, how many people are actually meditating on acting religiously? People think religiousness means go to the church or the synagogue or the mosque or the temple, and that's acting religiously. But that's actually not what religion is all about. Religion means to develop four principles. What are those four principles? The four principles of religiosity. What's that? That's two. Cleanliness. Truthfulness. Takes us a while to figure it out. Yes, there are four principles of religiosity. If people are not truthful, of course, ultimately truth is to admit that everything belongs to Krishna. Otherwise, to some degree or another, it's a lie. If I think I'm this body, I may say everything truthful except the fact that I'm a thief. And I've stolen this. I'm in the mentality of a thief. Thieves are not generally very truthful. And cleanliness. Cleanliness means to think about Krishna. Without being absorbed in Krishna consciousness, our minds are polluted by so many material desires. And mercy means to tell people about Krishna. Otherwise, we're putting them into the material, furthering their material concept of life. And austerity means to utilize everything for Krishna's service. To stop trying to stop being under the influence of the illusory energy, tolerate the impulses and material senses, and utilize the senses instead for Krishna's service. That's austerity. Just like today is Shiva Bhaktivinoda Thakura's appearance day, is that right, or disappearance? Disappearance, yes. So his disappearance is not meant so that we fast for half a day so that we suffer and curse Shiva Bhaktivinoda Thakura causing us to fast. No, it's to help us remember Shiva Bhaktivinoda Thakura and his teachings and activities so that we become Krishna conscious. So these are the four principles of religiosity: truthfulness, cleanliness, mercy, and austerity. And why are they, what breaks those principles? What is the cause of their being broken? How do we know if someone is actually not merciful? People are claiming that they're very merciful. How do we know when they're not merciful or truthful or clean or austere? How do we know? What are the four pillars of sinful activity? Everyone's a little slow for answering. Meat eating, intoxication, illicit sex, and gambling. Yes, these are more mental speculation. So these are the pillars. Unless people are practicing becoming truthful and austere and merciful and clean, there is no question of religious life. We can go to the church and live there, and we may be the most sinful person on the planet. If we're killing animals, taking intoxication, and having illicit sex, and gambling or speculating. So that's only the beginning, religious life. And then as Prabhupada explains in the purport in the Bhagavad Gita, yesham antakatam papam jananam punya karmanam. That we also not only have to give up sinful life, but we have to accept pious life. What is pious life? We have to become following at least the culture of piety. Piety in the beginning means live in an atmosphere of fresh air, where nice food offered to Krishna, nice relationships with people based upon the conception that everyone is Krishna's servant. In other words, unless one is living a pious life, dedicating, seeing everything belonging to Krishna, and utilizing things properly by protecting the cows, protecting the land, protecting the atmosphere, if these consciousness of protection is there for Krishna's property, that's called a vaisha. And that's called piety. If one is exploiting the land, exploiting people, exploiting the animals, then one is a demon. How does one become a demon like that? A demon, asura. It means that in the previous lifetime, one was a good shudra. He obeyed the higher personalities. He lived a life in accordance. And therefore, he cut out some of his sinful activities. And he became elevated in his next lifetime to that of a person with more control over the material energy. But if he gets bad association and utilizes it for material exploitation, then he becomes a Naradama instead of a Vaishya. A bad Vaishya is a Naradama. He lives in a civilized society, so-called civilized. He eats his meat with a fork and knife and wipes the blood with a nice napkin. But he's a Naradama. He's a sinful personality. He's gained some piety, and therefore he's living in a fairly civilized society. People are not eating each other on the street. There's something called law and order, although it's all generally mental concoctions. And there's so many laws that no one, even the judges don't even know what they are. If they like you, there's one law. If they dislike you, there's another law. So this is called so-called civilization. But real civilization is pious life, civilized, where people are protecting the animals, they're protecting each other, they're protecting the land, they're protecting the atmosphere. And by such protection, by such activities, then one may actually rise up to some knowledge and learn tolerance, because things are not always going so well. And therefore, when things are not going well, generally people become angry and they start doing all kinds of nonsense things. So one has to learn tolerance even in the midst of disturbance. Tate nukampam susamikshamano punjana evatmakritam vipakam ridvag vapubir vidadan manoste vivetas tan mukti sedate subdayabak. That even when things are not going so well, that one still has to maintain one's religious principles and not become disturbed, realizing that things are not going well, not by accident, but these things are meant to teach us a lesson. Within our heart, we have so many material desires, and sometimes they manifest themselves in our lives by difficult circumstances. But the difficult circumstances are an impetus to take shelter of Krishna. They're not just meant to cause us suffering. They're meant to cause us a attitude of surrender to Krishna, taking shelter of Krishna, not only praying to Krishna, but also ultimately thinking about Krishna, coming to another platform of experience where one is not disturbed by what's ever going on externally. If our only wealth, our only possession, our only interest is the external material world, we're going to be very disappointed. Because whatever we've gained now, whatever we think we have now, whatever we're proud of now, is going to dissolve and disintegrate, and we'll become very disturbed and embarrassed. If that's our only wealth, is external wealth, it's all very temporary, and ultimately can't completely satisfy us. But if there's some difficulty and we take shelter of Krishna, not just with the idea of Krishna, please protect my material assets, please end my suffering, but to actually become conscious of Krishna, then we get the real wealth. That is, we live in the world where everything is blissful, full of consciousness, eternally. And ever more lovingly, ever more enthusiastic, ever more intriguing and exciting. So we can come to that level of consciousness, then we get the greatest gain. So the suffering is actually meant to inspire us to get out of the material consciousness and enter into spiritual consciousness. Take shelter of becoming actually thinking about Krishna. Then one can actually accept devotional service, real devotional service, not based upon Krishna, free my suffering, Krishna, give me a nice material existence, Krishna, tell me how I can help my other friends and relatives and other people get a nice material existence. Krishna, let me merge in Brahman, let me realize I'm eternal and get free from anxiety. No, to take something positive up, to serve Krishna and his mission. That's real devotional service. And then one can actually understand who Krishna is and what's going on in this material world. It's not actually the horrible place that people think, although it is a horrible place. Krishna says, Ugra Rupa is a horrible form of the material world, but it has its purpose, to become an instrument for Krishna. Those who become an instrument for Krishna, they become victorious. And those who don't, they simply merge back into birth and death under the influence of time and eventually get another chance in the future to become an instrument for Krishna if they've actually understood and learned their lessons properly. So Indra is being attacked by sinful reaction, so that's good. Because the idea is if you get chastise enough, maybe you'll stop doing the same thing. They cause you to become chastised. So an intelligent person, he can learn by hearing, and a person who's not so intelligent, he has to learn by experience. And a person who's a fool, he doesn't learn, no matter what the experience is, like a dog. A dog comes to your table to get something to eat, and you take a newspaper and smack him, and he goes running away. And 5 minutes later, the dog comes, and you go, and he runs away. He doesn't learn. It doesn't matter how many times you smack him. His memory lasts a couple of minutes, and then he's back at the table again. He gets smacked again. So we shouldn't be like a dog. We should learn when we get smacked that we should stay away from the table. Stay away from the activities that cause us the suffering in the first place. If you look at Srila Prabhupada, looking at the fifth canto, when he received the fifth canto, there's a picture of Prabhupada looking at the pictures of hell and the suffering. And there's a big smile on his face. So we conclude that Prabhupada was a sadist. He enjoyed watching people suffering. No. The idea was that he understood that even hell, even the suffering is meted out by Yamaraj, they have their purpose to purify the soul to bring him back to Godhead. It's part of a plan by Krishna, a process of making the soul eligible to go back to the spiritual world. It's all very positive. When Prabhupada was informed that in certain parts of the world, people are starving, Sarup Damodar Maharaj had a conversation with Prabhupada, and Prabhupada said, well, that's good for them. Now, if people heard that without a full explanation, they may think, well, your founder Acharya is quite cruel. He's saying that people are starving and it's good for them. But Prabhupada explained, it's just like if you're in a hospital and you're sick, that sometimes they order you to fast. Like we're ordered to fast today. But that's good, because that way they'll become cured from their disease. So similarly, Krishna arranges things not to torture people or to inflict punishment or pain upon people, but to give them the chance to recognize their misdeeds and stop the misdeeds and start good deeds, the proper deeds, so they could go back to the spiritual world and end the suffering. We have to give up which is unwanted, and we have to accept which is wanted. But generally, we can't accept fully what's wanted until at least we give up which is unwanted. There may be $1 million on the floor, but if you're holding 50 cents in your hand and you won't give up the 50 cents, then you can't pick up the $1 million. The classical example is a monkey. Do you know how to trap a monkey easily? Anyone know ever learn the art of trapping a monkey? It only costs you around €1. How do you trap a monkey for €1? What's that? A what? Oh, that's one way. Yeah. But yeah, you tie the coconut. Yeah, sure. The other way, if you can't get a coconut, because there's not so many not so many monkeys either. But if you want, you can also get a bottle and put a banana in a bottle. And so the monkey sticks his hand in the bottle and grabs hold of the banana. But he's so attached to the banana that he won't let it go. So now he's trapped by the banana, which is in the bottle. So he tries to pull it out, but his hand can't come out because he made a fist. So unless he lets the banana go, he can't let his hand can't come out of the bottle. But he won't let the banana go, so his hand is trapped inside the bottle. Try it. It works. So similarly, everyone in the material world, we say, I want to go back to the spiritual world. I want to go back to the spiritual world. But I don't want to give up my banana. So therefore, sometimes one is chastised by the illusory energy, come and enjoy, and you get smacked. Prabhupada gives the example of the ass going for sex life, and the she donkey kicks him in the face, and he's thinking, she loves me. So similarly, the material world means you're going to get kicked. And if we take it, oh, this is just part of the material world, and for that one drop of nectar, kick me in the face again. Not a good idea. The idea is getting kicked is to learn the lesson that, so we stop getting kicked, we stop doing the activities that cause us to get kicked, and we start doing the things that cause us to become conscious of Krishna again, which is the ultimate reward of existence. So I'll stop there. Thank you. Any questions? By the way, one devotee told me this is the best connection to ISKCON Mayapur you've seen. That the Ljubljana connection is crystal clear.
Yeah, so my question is practical. You mentioned that the living being learns when it gets kicked, more or less. Or when
hopefully he learns.
Yeah, or it goes to hell and it somehow learns. But on the other side, we forget.
Maybe he learns.
Maybe. So how does this work technically?
What's that?
How does this work technically? Because we do bad deeds, maybe we go to hell. But we don't remember that we were there, so how do we learn?
Or there's some subtle remembrance. It takes a long, obviously it takes, going to hell is not the end of it. Then you get the body of a lower species of life and go through a lot of experiences. They're all registered in the subtle body. But we're quite stubborn. Because, as I said before, people are so much convinced that a little bit of sensory enjoyment is a good thing, and they'll tolerate all the miseries for that little bit of sense enjoyment. Then it's very hard to teach people that. As Prabhupada said, it's easy to wake up someone who's asleep, but someone who's actually awake but pretending to be asleep, it's very hard to wake them up. So people are convinced that they like being the lord of the material energy, then they're given a chance in 8,400,000 species of life to maintain that feeling that they're the lord and enjoyer. As I said before, Prabhupada coming back from Los Angeles, and he passed by the movie theater, and the title of the movie was, Is There Sex After Death? So Prabhupada came back and gave the lecture in Los Angeles, and told the devotees when they go out for preaching that day, they should tell people that they shouldn't worry, that there is sex after death. In 8,400,000 species of life, there's sex. And if people know that, they won't be fearful of death. So if we're attached to this idea that we're going to become the enjoyer and the controller, then it doesn't matter how much suffering we go through, we'll never learn until we give up that idea. So that may take some time. Yes.
Why did Indra don't use Tulasi Devi for purification?
Because Tulsi would have kicked him in the face. He'd kill the Brahmin, walk around Tulsi a few times. No, I mean, this idea that we sing it, even the killing of a Brahmin, but you have to have a certain mentality. It's not that, as it says in the Nectar of Devotion, that there is results, extraordinary results from performing things like clapping before the deities or dancing before the deities or watering Tulsi. But these don't happen to everyone. They happen to some rare souls who have the proper consciousness, the proper attitude when they're doing these activities. So the problem with Indra is that, in this particular instance, he had the mentality that I can do something. I can have my cake and eat it, for somehow there's an expression like that. I can perform sinful activities, and I'm going to get away with it. I'm going to perform some sinful activity and go around Tulsi, and everything's going to be all right. No, it's not going to be all right. If that's the mentality, nam na balad yasya nahi papa buddhi, then Tulsi won't protect you, no one will protect you. Matter of fact, Tulsi will probably tell Krishna, send this person to the darkest regions of existence. Because ultimately the shelter is the holy name, but if one commits sinful activities on the strength of the holy name, then the holy name will not protect one. Because why should Krishna protect one? The idea is to become Krishna conscious, to become a sincere servant of Krishna. Why will Krishna encourage people to utilize him for sinful activities? It's like, you know, you're a thief, you're stealing from the government, and then the government says, well, you know, just chant my name, the government, and then you'll get free from all your reactions. We won't arrest you or send you to jail. Just say the government is nice, and you're free. Why would the government do that? No, the government's going to punish you even more. Now, if you're sincere and you approach the government, you ask for forgiveness, then the government will take that into account. But not that you chant the government's name, you expect to become free from all your illegal activities. The government will never accept that. Anything else? Thank you very much. Grandharaj Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.